And welcome back to another episode of Masked Monologues. Today I have Cabrina Ashley with me. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm excited for our conversation today. So again, my name is Cabrina Ashley. I am a conversion storyteller and messaging coach. So I help businesses and entrepreneurs tell better stories on social, in systems, and on stages. And I do this through business coaching, speaker coaching, as well as business consulting and corporate training.
Wow, that's wonderful. Can you tell us a little bit about some businesses you've worked with in the past and how you were able to assist them?
Yeah, absolutely. So my original training came from being a corporate trainer at Disney. I trained their cast members on, so what does it look like when somebody's in the park and has a disability that you're not familiar with? How do you handle that? What does that look like? As well as going through each attraction and writing all of their pamphlets for children with autism.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so that's some of the people that I've worked with. So some of the bigger brands, I've also worked with thousands of entrepreneurs, helping them hone their message of how do we actually get seen and heard out in the market? And what does it look like to be somebody who people know and trust in a way that makes them comfortable working with us? Because we live in a day and age where it's a little bit scary to give somebody on the internet your money.
Yes, definitely. I'm wondering, how would you help a business build a relationship with their clients and gain that trust, gain that communication, build that relationship with them?
Yeah, absolutely. So it comes down to, what story am I telling? And so many people, especially when they start a business, they're like, this is the really cool big things that I do. And they forget that people are really far away from that because they haven't solved their problem yet. So if I was to tell you that I've been keynote speaking and on all these big stages and getting asked to speak all over the world, it's cool and all. But at the same time, it makes people feel like they're very distant from that possibility of, oh, what did they do to get there? They must have had a leg up. Oh, that must be nice. Those are the things that we tend to hear people say, when really you could start with, hey, I started by doing X, Y, and Z, going on podcasts, doing small stages close to home, creating my own stages, running my own webinars. And then as people started to see me, then you could cast that bigger vision for people. But so many times we see people just talking about the big jets and how much money they're making and standing in front of that really cool car that everybody wants to have because everybody's into Range Rovers right now. Yes. And that seems so distant to people who haven't solved their problems. And this goes for anything that you're talking about. We see it in weight loss all the time. Somebody will be like, oh, look, I lost 100 pounds. But somebody who needs to lose 50 pounds, they go, cool, but is this going to work for me? Is it? I have less weight to lose, but is that something that's going to work for me to get to where I want to go? And what does this look like? Because we're very selfish creatures. We want to talk to what they actually want at the end of working with us or at the end of using our product versus all these features and all these pieces that we tend to lean so heavily into.
Yes, no, pop culture definitely loves to emphasize all the overnight successes and the end results, when in reality, it's a slow climb.
It really is. And Miley Cyrus told it to us best in her song, The Climb. Okay, this takes a while. This is hard. And thinking about all these different people who you are one-hit wonders, do you really want to be somebody who is a one-hit wonder, makes it to the top of a list, and then we never know what happened to them again? They don't create real success, and they don't create an actual business because they just came and went. And having a business means something that's sustainable, that ideally you can either pass on to your children, your family, or sell at some point.
Yes. And I just want to go back to your point about showing others that there is a possibility to improve, that you don't necessarily have to be the most outgoing, the most charismatic person in the room to be a good communicator. Can you tell me some strategies that you'd use for somebody, let's say, who might be a bit timid, a bit introverted, maybe is uncomfortable speaking with people or just in social situations in general, what advice would you have for them?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many things. So we'll start with the idea of getting in front of people for the first time, because a lot of the clients that come to me are actually introverts. They don't like being in front of people. They're like, I want to grow my business, but I'm not sure exactly how to get in front of people in a way that I'm not going to feel like I'm talking just to talk.
Yes.
And it comes down to a couple of things. Seeing the things that you actually want to tell people. So what I always have my clients go through when they first start working with me is I go, anytime that you call your mom, your best friend, your spouse, and you're like, I need to tell you about this thing that happened, I have them write it down. They think I'm crazy at first because it's something that you're like, why would I write this down of something personal that I would tell somebody close to me? But those are the stories that start to create connection with our audience. So if I was to tell you about seeing a hot air balloon, this is something that really happened to me this last week. We saw a hot air balloon right outside of our house. It decided to land in our neighborhood. And it was something that they just find a path to land when they get to a point where they need to. And so we were able to walk over to it and see this hot air balloon and met several people in the process of it. That story might not make sense to anybody at the moment, but then we have to backtrack and say, okay, how does things happening that are unexpected work? And for me, for a business, of how do you grow a business? And so you can take any story that you're thinking about and go, this is the story that happened. This is just, and then you're just going to leave that open. We're going to put it, there's a part of your brain called the reticular activator. And your brain does not like open loops. So if you can start thinking about, what is this like? It makes it a lot easier to tell a story that's happened to you that you know deeply, and then say, this is just like in your business when unexpected things happen. And you have to go and figure it out and discover things, but you never know who you're going to bump into along the way. And that could actually lead into another story of maybe you bumped into somebody networking, and then you're telling a business story versus that personal story. And we're just hopping from story to story. So people go, oh, I've had that experience. Or, oh yeah, I've seen that. And it gives them the opportunity to then jump into your story, which creates the know and trust, as well as makes it easier to get in front of people and have that kind of conversation.
Yes. No, it's so funny how in alluding to things that might have happened in your life can create this connection where people can connect the dots and draw it back into what their circumstances are, their life, what they're going through. And then they're able to relate to you because they've experienced something similar, and people love talking about what they've experienced, right? Who doesn't love just telling their story? I'm wondering, for people who might be presenting in front of a stage and a large audience, are there any mechanisms or tactics they could use to calm their nerves?
Yeah, so I have a couple of things that I do personally. So it is okay to have something that you have like in between your fingers when you get on stage. These can be really tiny things. Sometimes it's like a tiny piece of paper that you can just keep next to your side, and you can rub your fingers back and forth on that little piece of rolled up paper, like the trash from a straw, for example. That's super not noticeable for most people. And if you talk with your hands, that's something that you can easily keep in your hand and not have to worry about. But then when your hand by your side, it's not like you're grabbing at your clothes or anything that's going to make big movements. It's something that can be very tiny. So if you're needing something that's a little bit more fidgety, that's a really great way. Other ways is to use the stage for movement. So most people will have 3 points in a talk that they give, no matter how long it is. So then we can look at the stage, and if you are standing on it, so pretend like you're looking at your audience, we're going to go to the right first, and we're going to say, okay, this is point one. Then we're going to go all the way to the left for point two, and then we're going to go to the middle far back for point three, and then our closing will be in the middle front. The reason being is because now, no matter how long my speech is, let's say that it's 45 minutes, we're only staying in one spot for about 10 to 12 minutes, which makes it really easy for us to engage with that side of the room, look at all of those people in the eye, and then move to the other side. So there's two real big purposes of this. It's one, so that the whole stage feels like they're involved in the conversation. It also makes it to where we don't pace, but it gives us that opportunity to move our bodies, because what's happening when you're nervous is that there's trapped energy in your body, and that energy has to go somewhere. It can't just be put into a container and sat there. It's if you were to put jumping beans inside of a glass jar and put it on the counter and expect it to just sit there. It's going to start wobbling around. And that's why we see people on stage that will lean back and forth and almost dance with themselves awkwardly on the stage, because one leg gets tired and then you switch to the other leg. Or they pace back and forth and it's like watching them chase themselves on a stage. And that's totally just because of nerves. And as you get more comfortable, you start to go, oh, I can use my hands more. Even on this podcast, I'm using my hands a lot because it's an easy way for me to get the point across. Even if you can't see it, it helps the presenting style and what it sounds like. And so practicing in front of the mirror, getting on podcasts, talking to your friends, having your family sit around and listen to you talk about what your topic is a really good way to get the practice in. The other thing you can be doing that is also getting you clients at the same time is running weekly webinars, because then I can do that same talk over and over again, practice, record it, watch myself back, and then make it just a little bit better every single time.
Yes. No, I definitely love your point about speaking with your hands, because I'm somebody who also tends to speak with my hands as well. You can't see it on the podcast recording, but I'm moving my hands all the time. I'm wondering about your communication. You said that you also do a lot of storytelling. Do you do that in verse form or written form, where you can write paragraphs, and do you communicate in that manner, or is it just public speaking and orally?
Yeah, so I do a little bit of both. I think once you get into this world, you end up writing a book. I used to be a copywriter, so I was writing lots of other people's content for years. And so you get really good at starting to tell stories, tell other people's stories. And then I have a couple of different books that I write on the side just for fun that are more romance novel kind of pieces. But you start to see stories everywhere. Anytime that you get ingrained in something and you start using it in your life, any form, you start to see them everywhere you go. And so my friends and I'll have conversations of, oh, wouldn't this be cool if this happened? And I'm like, oh, that's a story that I can tell.
Yes.
And some of the best examples of this is, we see this with Taylor Swift specifically, is that she tells her own stories. A lot of people know her as the person who just tells stories about the people she's broken up with. But she's also telling stories about what the media has said about her, what they think about her, as well as other people's stories altogether. So it's really a way for you to start writing consistently, even if it's just a couple hours a day. One of the things I tell my clients who hate to write is I tell them to pop their headphones in and go on a walk somewhere where they enjoy it, and just talk into their phone and let it transcribe it for them in a note. But that way they can start getting the things in their head out onto paper, because then we can start using it. If it's all trapped in your head, we can't really do a whole lot with that.
And something else I want to just draw attention to about public speaking is a lot of people will try and switch out their vocabulary with words that might be more advanced, or just switch out those filler words, the words that you might consider to be not as high quality as others. Would you suggest that, or have you ever worked with your clients in that area?
It's probably the best question I've ever had on this whole entire topic, because you're right. A lot of people do try and sound smarter when they get in front of people. The problem is that people buy at a fourth grade reading level. Like they take in information at a fourth grade reading level, no matter how smart they are, no matter how high their IQ is. Mm-hmm. And we know this from studies. So if we know that people are going to buy from us at a fourth grade reading level, why would I start putting extra words in that they don't understand? Because the second that I add a word in that people have to go, what does that mean again? That's the second that I lose their attention, because there's something called the second voice. It's that voice in your head that when somebody says something, you go, that's interesting. And then you start thinking about that thing, not even listening to what their next sentence is. And so when we are not clear and concise in our speech, we draw people away into their second voice. And then they're like, what does that mean? Or they're Googling it on their phone and then somebody texts them. And so now we've distracted them by trying to be smarter and act cooler than we actually are. And being cool has nothing to do with how many words, even though that's really what people think. That's why people do it. They're like, I want to be seem smarter, seem cooler, more cutting edge, which is great and fine if that's really who you are. But if you get on stage, people can smell inauthenticity from a mile away.
Yes.
Being very clear on your message. If it's a word that you have to use, algorithm is obviously not a fourth grade reading level word. But if I'm talking about how LinkedIn, if I'm doing a corporate training on LinkedIn and I'm talking about how the algorithm works, I have to use that word. But because of the context, people understand that. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to use the word algorithm just for fun, though, because it sounds cool.
I suppose it also depends on your audience. What level of intellect are they at? What words are they familiar with? And then tailoring it to that, would you say that has something to do with it?
Yes, and keeping it as simple as possible. I will always lean towards clear over clever every single time. Even if I know that my audience is totally capable of that. I work with a lot of CEOs and C-suite executives, and they're amazingly smart people, some of the brightest humans on this planet. And I will still talk as if I am talking to a fourth grader, not because it's demeaning, but because it helps to get the message across more clearly without there being interference. If you think about it like a football game, you have somebody who, the quarterback, who's trying to throw the ball to somebody. And if you have all the extra people in the way, it starts to create noise. And that's what creating extra, too many words on your slides or moving too much on stage or using words that don't really need to be used. And if I can just throw the ball with nobody on the field, it's pretty much guaranteed that the other person's going to catch it, especially if they're NFL trained.
And I'm wondering, say you were preparing for a big speech and you didn't want it to sound as structured, as fabricated, would you suggest being spontaneous and referring to a list of bullet points instead of memorizing a speech? Or what are some tips and tricks to still feel authentic and present your pitch, whatever you need to present, without it being sounding like a robot?
Absolutely. So there are a lot of people who love to memorize their speeches. So I don't want to push anybody away from doing that. If that is your style and that's what helps you feel comfortable when you get on stage, because everybody has nerves, no matter how long you've been doing this, how prepared you are, everybody has nerves to some degree. However, I train my clients on how to do both. The reason being is because you never know what people are going to want to do, as well as being spontaneous comes with time. So if this is your first speech you've ever done on a live stage, especially, you probably should have some pieces of it memorized, or at least have enough prompts on your slides to jog your memory every single time you need to change topics. As long as you can jog your memory and you're really good at talking around things, then you're good to go. So what I try and do is create slides that have very little words on them. So that way you don't have to worry about overwhelming people with the words, because you don't want them to just read the same thing that you're saying.
Right.
That's a piece of time for everybody.
People can read it faster and then you can speak it.
Exactly. And then people are like, well, what did you bring to the table? So if I say, maybe there's some points that I want to point out about a specific software, for example, but then I'm going to use stories around that. Of, this is why we use that software. Here's an example of a client using this. This is why you should implement this. And here's more examples of what that could look like. So thinking about every time you're talking about something as an Aesop's fable, what is the end meaning of this for these people? What do they need to be gleaning from this?
No, I love everything about that, how just focusing on the message and communicating it in the most effective and succinct, concise way possible. That's what public speaking is all about, or at least from my knowledge. I'm wondering, do you ever use any autopilot or default phrases or suggest that people have these in their storage, like the back of their memory, just to draw from in moments of hesitation or just moments where they don't know what to say, because maybe we've all had those moments where thoughts have slipped our mind and we have nothing to say. We're just there and we're thinking, and there's a pause. I'm wondering if you suggest people should resort to these phrases, and maybe that triggers another phrase, and then you're able to get back into the flow of conversation. Do you ever suggest that for your clients?
Having phrases that you're using when you lose track is not usually a great strategy. The reason being is because if you lose track at a spot that you don't have a phrase for, then you're really stuck, or you're saying something that doesn't make sense and hoping that it'll get you back on track. And this is an opportunity, especially when you're on stage, to be honest with the audience. The other thing that you can do that's a really easy way to cover this for yourself is have water on the table that most stages provide, either a podium or a table, something to set some water on. And you're going to have your notes on that table. You're going to go over and you're going to say, hey, give me 1 second while I just grab a drink of water. You're going to take a drink of water slowly. You can give yourself 10, 20 seconds. You're going to look through your notes and you're going to find where you are. And that's where you're going to pick up. You can keep notes with you all of the time. You don't need to have them in your hand. They can easily be on that table. And nobody will even know that you have notes. It also is totally fine to have notes. And most attendees don't even realize that you're holding them, because they're ingrained in what you're talking about and paying attention to you and your stories and all of these different pieces that we're talking about so far, that they are not paying attention to the tiny little piece of paper in your hand.
Yes. And lastly, I'd like to talk about eye contact and body language. We touched on this previously about walking back and forth, not looking too antsy, but just with eye contact, how do you keep straight eye contact with your audience and then still refer back to your notes, go back and forth? How would you approach that?
Yes, absolutely. So looking at your notes, doing that in a way that makes you feel comfortable. Obviously, not looking at them in between every single thing, but just like your slides, having them be something that you can glance at and have it be really easy for you to know what's next. So I try and prompt myself on just my slides now with an image, with a couple of words that I put on there that makes it really easy for me to just pull up in my brain what that next thing is about. This is where you get really good at talking around a subject, because once you start talking about it, then people start going, oh, okay, I understand that. And then your brain has a few seconds to catch up. So that gives you an opportunity to say, hey, here's this topic that I'm talking about. You flip to that next slide and it gives you that first sentence that you need to say, instead of having to look at your notes, because the more notes you have, the easier it is to get lost and then have to look at them for longer.
Yes. No, that's an amazing piece of advice. I'd like to wrap up this episode now. So if you want to shout out to any of your social media channels, your website, feel free to mention them so that our viewers can check you out.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me at KabrashLee.com, as well as on LinkedIn. And then if you're interested in learning more about how to create better messaging, you can go to micdropmessage.com, and I have a free mini course that you can run yourself through that gives you a lot of these tips and pointers of how to create clear messaging for your people so you can get clients that are ready and raving to work with you.
Thank you so much. We appreciate all the advice that you've shared today. And if you listeners like this podcast and you want more episodes like this, then please do share it with a friend and family member and go check Cabrina out.
Hey, awesome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Love it for me. Love it for me. No love.